September 1st. Dear Diary, I'm sorry for neglecting you. My days and many of my nights have been consumed by the opening of Thimble Pleasures. Oh, and what an opening it was! For some reason, both Sheila and I were terrified that no one would show up, even though we did a bang-up job of publicizing it. Well, Emily did a bang-up job. As a former band manager, she knows all about getting the word out. She established a Thimble Pleasures Instagram account and used every hashtag that had anything to do with quilters and quilting on every post. She got Sheila a guest spot on our local NPR station, WMFS, as well as two local morning drive shows, Marvin in the Morning and Mike in the Morning. She got the word out about opening day specials and giveaways. She let it be known far and wide that there would be cake and candy. And some of her press releases hinted that there might be a few bottles of champagne in the back room. Which is why, when Sheila opened the shop doors at 10 a.m. on the morning of August 25th, there was a line that extended all the way up and all the way down building number 5's third floor. Not only did it seem like every quilter in Milton Falls showed up, there were also quilters from Columbus, Louisville, Cincinnati, and Indianapolis on hand. It turns out Marvin in the Morning can be heard 200 miles in any given direction. To say the opening was overwhelming is not an exaggeration. It was crazy. It was like a sorority party for quilters. We had to call in backup workers. Daryl got everyone from the Modern Guild's Charity Quilt Committee to come, and I called in emergency reserves from the Peacemakers. Really, halfway through the day, I was afraid we were going to run out of fabric to sell. So I think it's safe to say that the opening was a success. Now for the gossip. First, Tom Grangerfield showed up at 1 p.m. sans Abby. He had a gift basket in one hand and lunch from the sandwich board in the other. "I'm willing to bet that you haven't eaten all day," he told Sheila, handing over the lunch. "You were too nervous this morning, and you haven't had a second to think, much less eat, ever since your doors opened. Am I right?" Emily, having observed this exchange from the Notions wall, zipped over and said, "He's right, Mom. You need to eat. I'll take over for you at the register while you get some food." "I'll join you," Tom told Sheila. "I bought two sandwiches just in case you wanted company." And away they went to the office. Emily looked at me and said, "You know he came by last night after you left, right? Just to see if Mom needed any last-minute help. He was here until 9:30. I took a couple of steps back, stunned. Why didn't she tell me? Emily shrugged. "She probably forgot. She was here until midnight and got up this morning at 6. Whatever happened yesterday seems like a long time ago at this point." That's when it occurred to me. If Sheila and Tom become an item, where does that leave me? Will Sheila start keeping secrets from me? I don't keep any secrets from her, but Daryl and I have been together forever. It's different when you first fall in love and live in your own private world, just the two of you. And what if, and this was really too terrible to think about, but I couldn't seem to stop, what if Sheila no longer has the time to meet me for emergency breakfast at Linway's? What if, God forbid, she started counting calories because she wants to look good for Tom? What if she started going to the gym and wearing yoga pants all the time? I had to sit down and put my head between my knees. I want love for Sheila, big love. She doesn't need a man to take care of her, but wouldn't it be nice if she had a man who wanted from time to time to make her life easier, sweeter? Yes, it would be nice. I decided to think about it this way. There's every chance in the world that Tom Grangerfield has a vacation home in Lake Como, Italy, right next to George Clooney's. If Sheila starts dating him, maybe he'll invite us to come visit. So, anyway, I recovered from this little nervous breakdown, took a break to grab some lunch for myself at the coffee shop on the first floor, and came back for a long afternoon of making money for Sheila. That's when the other surprise of the afternoon occurred. Tom left around 2, but he was back at 4 p.m., this time with his sister Darla and their cousin Natalie. I've mentioned Tom's family ties before. He's the grandson of Emmeline Grangerfield, one of Milton Falls' most famous quilters. Building number 5 was owned by his great-aunt Florence. It's where she started her quilting company. So, this trio that walks into the store late Saturday afternoon is composed of Emmeline's grandchildren, some of them, and Florence's nieces and nephew. Darla is carrying a large bag, which she brings to the counter and gives to Sheila. "We're excited that you opened a quilting store in the same place our aunt started her quilting business in 1933," Darla announced. "It's all Tom's talked about for the last few weeks. We thought it would be appropriate for you to have this." This turned out to be a quilt made by Florence Grangerfield in the early 1930s, a beautiful grandmother's garden. "Oh, this should be in the museum," Sheila exclaimed. "It was in the museum," Natalie said dryly. "We reclaimed it. For reasons I don't understand, Mimi has never put it on display, and it should be displayed. Tom thought maybe you could hang it in your office. If not, perhaps in your home."
"It would be perfect behind my desk." Sheila turned to Tom. "Thank you so much for thinking of me."
Tom smiled. "Of course. It seems to be all I do these days." Just as Sheila was blushing a bright tomato red, Abby walked into the store, looking fabulous as usual. She called out to Tom, but it was as though he didn't hear her. He was too busy smiling at Sheila. Finally, Darla patted him on his shoulder. "Your lady friend is here," she said. "You probably should attend to her." Tom nodded, but before he went to attend to Abby, he looked at Sheila one last time. "I know you'll be exhausted tonight, but how about dinner tomorrow? You should celebrate what you've done here." Sheila nodded, and then we all turned to watch Tom greet the clearly displeased Abby. There was no doubt about it. This was a soap opera in the making. But Tom was right. Now was the time for celebrating. The grand opening was a grand success, even if I still haven't recovered from it. September 8th. Jessica went into labor last night, or rather very early this morning. We're talking 2 a.m. Her due date is the 29th, but I guess this baby is ready to be born. Sort of. Because 14 hours later, the labor continues. I'm writing this at Sam and Jessica's, where we're watching the boys. The twins are napping now, as is Daryl, so I thought I'd take a minute or two to write. I'm worried that it's taking so long for this baby to be born. I had a long labor with Sam, 20 hours, but Kate popped out 2 hours after my contractions started. This isn't an uncommon story, the second baby coming so much faster than the first.
and it's one I told Jessica more than once. She was in labor for 28 hours with the twins. She was so determined not to have a C-section. Everything she read made her believe it would be better for the babies if she delivered them naturally. The payoff for all of that hard work, I assured her, was that this new baby would pop right out easy peasy. Well, as Sheila just texted me, every baby has its own way of coming into the world, and this one is coming slowly. Sam is keeping us posted. Everything's fine, nothing to worry about, other than Abby is there bossing around the nurses and urging Jess to, at the very least, get an epidural. I couldn't agree more about that. Why does Jessica always have to do things the hard way? I can tell from his text messages that Sam isn't crazy about having Abby there in the hospital. When the twins were born, she didn't show up until they were 2 weeks old. I know that hurt Jessica's feelings a little bit, but at the same time, it was for the best. Abby means drama. Abby means Sturm und Drang. Abby is all about keeping the focus on Abby. No one needs that after giving birth to twins. Sam suggested that maybe we could invite Abby over for dinner with her grandsons tonight, but I knew even before I called that she would say no. She's not very happy with me these days, ever since Tom turned his attention to Sheila. I get it. The fact that Tom has found another woman more interesting than he finds Abby has caused an existential crisis for our former beauty queen and current Silver Wave model. It's easy to laugh, but mostly I feel sorry for Abby. Here she is in her 60s, and it's finally dawning on her that looks aren't everything. Daryl has been hinting again that we should try to get Abby interested in quilt making. The fact is, she might be good at it. She has excellent taste and a good color sense. I don't recall her ever making anything, but better late than never. Also, she likes to shop. Quilting offers all kinds of shopping opportunities. Of course, she probably wouldn't shop at Thimble Pleasures. She'd take her business over to the Cozy Quilter. Speaking of which, word on the street has it that Gail is on the warpath. She has not taken Thimble Pleasures' early success well. I think if it had just been local folks who showed up at the opening, that would have been one thing. But people coming from Cincinnati, Louisville, that was a whole nother thing. Not that those out-of-towners will make Thimble Pleasures their primary quilt shop. Both of those places have their own great stores. But still, a lot of out-of-towners signed up for the Thimble Pleasures newsletter and will shop our online sales. They'll stop by on their way to Quilt National. They'll take trips to Milton Falls for a day at the Quilt Museum, and while they're here, well, why not check out Thimble Pleasures' latest fabrics and notions? They'll sign up for our online classes just as soon as we start offering them. Anyway, according to Lynn, who heard it from Mimi and was supposed to keep it on the low down but didn't, Gail plans to challenge the decision to give Thimble Pleasures space in building number 5 instead of the Cozy Quilter. Apparently, she's emailed several people on the Historical Society's board, i.e. the people who hired Mimi Pressler in the first place, which means they're the people who can fire her. I don't know how seriously to take all of this. It would be one thing if Gail had complained to the board immediately after Mimi made the decision to give the space to us. But now, that's just crazy. The shop is open, and it's a huge success. The other shops and restaurants in Building Number 5 are getting a boost from all the traffic Thimble Pleasures brings in. It's hard to believe Gail's going to be able to get the board to change its mind now. And still, I have to admit, it's nervous-making. Never underestimate the power of an angry quilt shop owner. September 10th. Welcome to the world, baby Alyssa. You took long enough, 20 hours, but it was worth the wait. I have a granddaughter. A granddaughter! Let the quilting begin. Thank you so much for listening to Diary of a Mad Quilter and for being a Story Guild subscriber. Keep tuning in for more quilt fiction and more quilty fun.